Today, a footballing fiasco, the rise and spectacular fall of the European Super League.
Terremoto en el fútbol europeo tras el anuncio del nacimiento de la Superliga.
We have had it the last couple of minutes. A statement leading European football clubs announce new Super League competition.
Con le grandi squadre europee a giocare il loro campionato in un'unica Superliga. 12 club.
There's never been a week like this. There's never been two, three days like what happened over the weekend.
David Conn has written about football for The Guardian for 16 years. But in all that time, he's never reported on something quite as extraordinary as the story of the European Super League, a breakaway competition that would have supplanted the Champions League and see some of the best teams from the continent, including six English sides, play each other as part of an elite championship. It was set to be one of the biggest shake-ups to professional football in its history, ending the idea that success comes through winning alone and creating a closed shop for the richest teams and their owners.
This threat of a breakaway European Super League by the top and the richest clubs across Europe has been made for 25 years. And so to see it finally happen and push the button on it was incredible enough. But then to see it just fall apart and crumble and how half-baked it was and everyone pull out after 2 days was really staggering. A 25-year threat crumbles in 2 days.
It's dead. Okay, it's not officially dead yet, but it is dead.
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus. Where did it all go wrong for the European Super League? David, on Sunday, the news broke that some of the top football teams in Europe were breaking away to join a new European Super League. Who was involved?
Five English clubs had signed up: Liverpool, Manchester United, Arsenal, Tottenham Hotspur and Chelsea. Real Madrid and Barcelona and Atletico Madrid from Spain were part of it. And that Juventus of Turin and the two Milan clubs. And then just a little bit later, Manchester City signed up as well. So then we had six English clubs signing up to this breakaway venture.
Okay, so I'm going to be honest, I don't know loads about football, but I do know that currently you have a Premier League in England and similar leagues elsewhere in Europe, and the best teams from those qualify each year for Europe's Champions League tournament. But what was the plan here? How would the Super League have actually worked?
Honestly, the plan was so incomplete. Like, to see these clubs that are so wealthy, mega competent, launch this thing in such an incomplete way was really staggering. So what they said was, it's going to be a league of 20 clubs, that 15 were going to be permanent members of this European Super League, and they couldn't be relegated however badly they'd played. And then they said the other five would somehow qualify, but they hadn't even worked out how they would qualify. They didn't have a broadcaster. They didn't have any sponsors signed up. But they had a merchant bank, JP Morgan, behind it, and corporate lawyers.
So this was basically an elite league for big teams to just play each other on rotation without a threat of relegation.
Exactly. Now, the plan was that that would be in midweek, so they would still be playing in their own national leagues. But instead of playing in the UEFA Champions League, which is the European elite competition that people qualify for on merit, a glittering, historic and marvellous competition, they would break away completely from that and form their own self-serving competition.
I mean, even as a non-football fan, David, I can see that this doesn't sound particularly sporting and also doesn't sound as much fun. Why were the teams doing this?
Well, one of the top football writers was interviewed about this during the week, and he said there are three reasons why the clubs are doing this: money, money, and money. if they have their own self-serving 20-club league, they will get broadcasting deals all around the world. They'll want to stream some of the matches themselves, and they would make millions and billions of pounds. And that's the plan. You know, it's reflecting on this, they've got very significant debts. But to me, it looks like however rich you are, you still feel like you're skint. They're also really worrying about the losses that they've made during the pandemic when they've had to pay money back to broadcasters, and obviously they've had empty stadiums. So they have lost fortunes that they would have otherwise had from supporters coming to the games. But of all the clubs that have got problems, the ones that have got the least problems are these super rich clubs.
On Sunday, these clubs did try to argue that they'd offer up some of the money to be made from the Super League for the good of football. The Real Madrid president, Florentino Perez, said that there would be a trickle-down effect. What did you make of all of that?
They really tried to say that it would be good for all of football. It was totally unconvincing. What they were proposing was that they would go off. They thought they were going to be making 4 billion euros a year. And they were saying that they were going to have for solidarity, as they call it, for sharing with the rest of the game, 8%. And they actually thought people would go for that.
When this story initially came out on Sunday afternoon, what was the reaction to it?
Yeah, well, the immediate reaction was completely hostile from absolutely everyone.
I mean, I'm a Manchester United fan and have been for 40 years of my life, but I'm disgusted, absolutely disgusted. Manchester United, 100 years, born out of workers around here, and they're breaking away into a league without competition.
Gary Neville, who is obviously ex-Manchester United legend and very high-profile pundit for Sky, he absolutely ripped into it immediately on television on the Sunday. And actually, I think he really set the tone.
It's criminal. It's a criminal act against football fans in this country. Make no mistake about it. This is the biggest sport in the world. This is the biggest sport in this country. And it's a criminal act against the fans. Simple as that. Deduct points, deduct their money and punish them.
The thing that struck me, David, about this story, reading it on Sunday, was that no one had a good thing to say about the Super League. And in news story terms, that's very unusual. Everyone was united on this one. Why was there so much anger about this from within football? Like, why was it seen as being so unfair?
Because it is anathema. I mean, sports, all sports are organised through governing bodies that have their roots in participation, their roots in an amateur ethos. And there's always been and had to be some kind of rough accommodation with the business of a sport. Football in the modern era, it is very unequal, but at the same time, the game has held together to the idea that football is a game for everyone in which there is a collective and an idea that a club can progress on merit through the divisions or win a cup and compete. So it really is a betrayal of the hope that it's still our sport. And that is the sense that people have, that supporting their club, however expensive it's got, is still something that they do from the heart. It's part of their family. It's part of their heritage. They can mark their lives in terms of what was happening that football season and where they were and who they were with when they went to that particular game. And this was seen as an attack on all of this.
The backlash to this Super League grew through Monday, didn't it? And in the afternoon, UEFA, Europe's football governing body, held a press conference. What happened?
Well, it's one of the most remarkable press conferences that you will ever see.
This is clear that those clubs don't care about fans. They think fans are consumers and customers. And they don't care about tradition. They don't care about anything except their wallets.
And which featured some of the most remarkable vitriol and insults for the people that had pursued this breakaway that you will also ever see?
You know, it's very hard to know what are the intentions of so dishonest people. Maybe they don't know what are their intentions, you know. But
the president of UEFA is Alexander Seferin, who is a Slovenian lawyer. And he said that he has worked as a criminal lawyer for 24 years and he's never seen people like this. And he called them snakes and liars.
Football is just mean girls. Who knew? Over in Westminster that Monday afternoon, David, the culture, media and sports secretary, Oliver Dowden, announced that the government would put everything on the table to stop this Super League from happening.
We will not stand by and watch football be cravenly stripped of the things that make millions across the country love it.
And as Prince William, who's president of the Football Association, said that this risked causing damage to the game. That night, Liverpool played Leeds, and that was when we first saw how angry fans were about this, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, the fans, even in the pandemic, not able to go to the match, went to the stadiums outside. You had fans shouting traitors, burning shirts, holding up placards. It's toxic.
You know what you are, six greedy bastards, you know what you are.
This Monday evening was also when we first heard from players themselves. What did they say? And what do you know about what was happening behind the scenes in the dressing room?
You had the manager of Liverpool, highly respected Jurgen Klopp, and James Milner, another very, very highly respected senior player, coming out publicly and saying that they didn't like the plan of their own club, Liverpool.
I mean, when as players did you start to become aware of all this talk of Super League?
Same as everyone else, I think, when it broke yesterday, and that's the first we heard of it.
It's all still fresh in the mind at the moment. Have the players had any chance to really discuss it or to absorb it at all?
I don't know. I think it's the same as everyone. There's a lot of questions. You know, I can only say my personal opinion. I don't like it, and, you know, hopefully it doesn't happen.
Another remarkable aspect of the whole debacle is that the clubs don't seem to have consulted with the players at all. What was reported was that there were confrontations at Manchester United. There were confrontations with Ed Woodward, the executive vice chairman, led by the captain, Harry Maguire, saying, what on earth is this all about? And why weren't we consulted?
Throughout Tuesday, we heard from more players who were issuing statements saying how upset they were about this. And crucially, no new clubs had signed up to the league beyond the original 12. Were those clubs starting to feel the pressure at this point?
Yeah, and there was a great deal of respect for the three that had obviously been invited who'd refused. So the two German giant clubs, and so had Paris Saint-Germain. So the 15 permanent members were lacking three as it was. And there'd been this enormous backlash. You had the politicians making serious threats. I mean, Boris Johnson talking about dropping a legislative bomb on them. I mean, that must have felt like a grenade lobbed in. They don't want to be this unpopular. They do care about that. So yeah, they started to waver then.
And then on Tuesday evening, David, it all came crashing down. Take me through what happened.
There were supporters protesting outside Stamford Bridge, where Chelsea Stadium, and they can't actually get into the stadium still at the moment because of coronavirus. And, yeah, well, Chelsea were playing Brighton. They're out there protesting against the greed of their own club. And then while they were there, Chelsea were briefing that they were going to pull out.
We're getting unconfirmed reports at this moment that Chelsea are pulling out of the Super League.
And yeah, there was jubilation. We just had this crumbling through Tuesday evening and into Tuesday night.
It's been a remarkable 15 minutes. I've got more for you as well. Martin Lipton from The Sun is tweeting that Manchester City are pulling out of the Super League.
Arsenal, the latest club to be starting the process of leaving the group.
One by one, they started to make statements that they were all withdrawing from it.
Now we have statements from the other four English clubs.
And in the middle of it all, Ed Woodward, who's the executive vice chairman of Manchester United, was stepping down. He's going to step down at the end of 2021, and that was seen as a casualty of this terrible plan. After finally pushing the button on a threat of a European breakaway Super League, within 2 days, the evening of the Tuesday, all six had stepped back and pulled out, and the whole thing was just crumbling.
And when you spell out the events of Tuesday evening, David, I mean, it's kind of ludicrous how things happened, and it seems like there's a huge amount of incompetence here. But what do you really think went on Tuesday? How on earth was it that this billion-dollar league was announced on Sunday and 2 days later these six clubs had withdrawn and the whole thing collapsed?
Yeah, the amateurishness of it is really astounding, because these are not amateurish organisations. By very definition, they're not just professional, but they are the absolute epitome of the world's most popular and most played sport. And to see them going into something like this so half-baked, there's a sense of desperation that they all just have got obsessed with how much money they're losing in the pandemic, and it sort of accelerated everything and made things that were the very, very last resort seem more possible. But I don't think, if people are trying to picture how this could happen, don't underestimate that these are people, ultimately, the people who own the clubs and run the clubs. They can start to look at something and realise it's all been a terrible mistake and they all got carried away. And they just started to realise that it just wasn't sustainable. It just wasn't going to happen.
So we glimpsed the European Super League for a brief moment, but it is now gone.
Yeah.
And this feels like, this feels like a huge victory for those fans who came out against this and, you know, united across old rivalries to challenge this move. Did the clubs underestimate how much power they have?
Absolutely. That's just obvious, isn't it? They completely underestimated the power they had. And actually, it's been really interesting to see that power asserted. So by supporters and the voice that they have got, by politicians, actually, I think that made a real difference. But also within football, that I think there's been a bit of a cowering to the big six in this country and the big clubs of Europe. And that pushback involved a reassertion of the authority of the more traditional structures, including the governing bodies, UEFA, which has actually come out of this strengthened.
Coming up, will the end of the European Super League mean the beginning of reforms to English football? The UK government is using this now to talk about making big reforms to football. What do you think this could look like?
The ideas that are being presented, which the government itself and Conservative MPs are viewing much more sympathetically than they ever have before, are that there should be a more equal distribution of money from the very, very rich clubs through football and into the grassroots, that there could be a mechanism like the German model where supporters control 50% plus one of certain crucial decisions, which is like a mutualising of the clubs from just being businesses. And there is also the idea that football, and particularly the Premier League, has just fought against for 25 years, which is a reviving of the idea that there is independent regulation of football. These ideas are actually being talked about more seriously, not just as a result of this, which has accelerated them, but actually they were being discussed before. And it is surprising that it's happening here under a Conservative government. But they have realised that in these new seats that they've won from Labour in what used to be called the Red Wall, the football club is a really big part of life there.
Where does this leave those six breakaway clubs, David. What will this mean for their relationships with the leagues and also their fans?
Well, in the initial aftershock of all this, it leaves them looking very sheepish. So, for example, John Henry, the majority owner of Liverpool, has gone from a plan for world domination on Sunday to a humble video apology on Wednesday.
I want to apologise to all the fan supporters of Liverpool Football Club for the disruption I caused over the past 48 hours. Goes without saying, but should be said, that the project put forward was never going to stand without the support of the fans. No one ever thought differently in England. Over these 48 hours, you were very clear that it would not stand. We heard you. I heard you.
And just for the moment, in terms of the clubs themselves, there's just some humble pie to be eaten. There's just this sense of, now, just be quiet for a bit.
It's been a wild ride, David, but what's really changed in football this week? I mean, what should we take from the meteoric rise and fall of the European Super League?
I think, actually, on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, there was a sense that some truths and the authority of the governing bodies had been reasserted, and that 25 years of everybody from the European governing body UEFA and every other club down had to be scared of this threat of a breakaway from football's own structures, that that's over and they don't have to be cowed by that threat anymore, and that there can be a reassertion of the view of football that, to be honest, most people just have instinctively in their hearts, which is they support their club. They probably play or played the game themselves. They've just grown up loving the game. They know that their club only exists if it's got other clubs to play against, that you progress on merit. Yes, if you're a very big club, you are going to make more money than a small town club, and therefore you are going to have better players. There's never going to be equality, but there can be more of a rough equality than there is now. And there can be more of a sporting sense rather than a drive to have football as a business and the clubs as corporations and the fans seen as customers and commodities rather than people to whom the clubs really belong.
David, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rachel.
That was David Conn. He's been reporting on this story all week, along with his colleagues on The Guardian Sports Desk. Find their excellent coverage and analysis at theguardian.com. Well, you can also listen back to two episodes of the Football Weekly podcast, which have covered all the twists and turns of the European Super League over the past few days. There will also be a Guardian Live online event to discuss the fallout from all of this next Tuesday, the 27th of April. Check theguardian.com/Guardian Live for details and to book tickets. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent and Alex Mislin. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. I hope you'll have a lovely weekend, and we'll be back on Monday.